WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we get right in off the air before we even start on the air to the conversation that we're about to have with the Brooklyn DA, Joe Hines, who is my first guest this hour, along with Deanna Rodriguez, head of the Brooklyn DA's anti-gang division. We will talk about a few things, but we asked Hines on the show today to respond to Bob Herbert's column in the New York Times last Saturday. The column referred specifically to Hines' appearance on this program last year about the group of young people charged with marauding through the streets of Brooklyn last May on their way to another teen's funeral. 26. Now, D.A. Hines says he wants to correct some numbers here, but the reporting that I've seen says 26 people were charged with crimes in that incident, and that so far 16 of the cases have been dropped, and there have been no convictions. We'll also ask D.A. Hines about arguing cases before a judge rather than a jury, since that's what the Queens D.A. is beginning today in the Sean Bell case, obviously separate from this. But D.A. Hines and Ms. Rodriguez, thanks very much for coming in. Good morning.
Morning.
We're going to talk about that as well, right?
And we will talk about
the reentry program.
And we are going to talk about the reentry, the alternatives to incarceration and reentry for drug offenders as well.
No, it's post-conviction, post-sentencing programs called reentry.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So let's get right to the Bushwick case. Bob Herbert says that you and Police Commissioner Kelly had to be engaging in a canard that was deliberate last year when you stated here that a marauding band of kids had terrified residents along Putnam Avenue on May 21st. And I want to play the clip of you on this program that Herbert quoted in his column as a deliberate canard because he says no evidence has been produced to support it.
We conducted an independent inquiry of that incident. We used my community relations specialist. I have one in, I have five of them actually in the county. We had many, many interviews with local store owners and people living in the neighborhood who were frankly scared to death of these kids. And not just walking on one car. They were trampling on all sorts of cars. It was almost like they were inviting their arrest. But all of that said, we have a community service program. None of those kids are going to be prosecuted. They're not going to go to jail. We are going to offer every one of them community service.
So do you stand by everything in that clip? And just to be clear and so the listeners know what we're talking about, in his column, Bob Herbert writes, to date, there has been no evidence produced, no witnesses, no photographs or videotapes, no dented vehicles or broken mirrors, nothing whatsoever to indicate that any of the youngsters had done anything at all that was wrong. How is it that you can have a rampage in broad daylight on a street in New York City and not be able to show in any way that the rampage occurred? So do you want to answer Bob Herbert's question?
Well, I'm a bit surprised that he's so naive as to think that the people in the neighborhood would be forthright because he announces that he is Bob Herbert of the New York Times. And why don't you tell us what really happened? These people have to live in that neighborhood. And any suggestion there wasn't gang activity is just naive. In addition to which, there hasn't been any convictions because there hasn't been a trial yet. There will be a trial that Deanna Rodriguez, who's the chief of the gang bureau in the Brooklyn DA's office, will be personally prosecuting. You don't have to show, damage to automobiles because simply because someone gets on the roof of a car doesn't necessarily mean there's going to be damage incurred. So, I mean, the bottom line is that we haven't had a trial yet. And so for Bob Herbert to say things like that, you know, to suggest that there was a canard, it's just not responsible. I'm surprised and disappointed. And we should get the numbers straight. First of all, there were 32 kids initially taken into custody. We only received 20 because the others were given summonses, and we have nothing to do with the summonses. So we had 20 cases. Deanna Rodriguez, and she can speak for herself, examined the evidence, found that we couldn't find specific acts to associate with the 10 people that we dismissed. The 10 that remain, we believe we have the evidence, and I'm not going to talk about the specifics today or Noel Deanna, but, you know, it's... The case will be coming to trial. Deanna, when is the case going to trial?
We'll be in court some of the cases today and in a couple of weeks to set a trial date. Yeah.
So is that going to be for each of those 10 individually, or are they being tried as a group, some of them?
Actually, we've broken it into two groups. The first trial will encompass four of the defendants, mm-hmm. and then the second trial would be the final six.
What's your role in this exactly?
Well, I'm the chief of the gang bureau. Our job is to prosecute gang-related, gang-motivated cases. We also do investigations with the gang units of the New York City Police Department.
So what are these 10 being charged with? Again, to refer to the Bob Herbert column and the independent investigation that D.A. Hynes referred to here last year, independent of the police, is I guess what he was saying. But where is the evidence of all these trampled cars that you found? And if somebody got up on a car but there was no damage done, what's the crime?
Well, let's be very clear on what they were charged with. These youths were charged with unlawful assembly, and they were charged with disorderly conduct. And the statute under which they were charged talks about a group of four or more persons who come together and behave in a manner which creates a risk of danger to both vehicular and pedestrian people.
What's the manner?
Well, in this particular case, what we would expect the evidence to show was that this was a group that went en masse into the streets, stopping vehicular traffic, impeding pedestrian traffic. There were members of that group that were jumping on cars. Again, that being behavior that would interfere and endanger other people.
Do you have evidence? Do you have witnesses? Do you have photographs? Do you have videotapes? Do you have dented vehicles or broken?
Bob Herbert's not a lawyer to begin with, and we don't need video. We don't need audio. We don't need anything other than the evidence that will be shown at the trials, and we're not going to tell you about the evidence at this point. We're not going to try the case on WNYC. The plain fact is that this was gang-related. These people were going to a funeral home as members of a gang to pay respect, they said, to the memory of one of the fellows who was killed by a rival gang member. The people in Bushwick have a right to expect that they can walk the streets, drive cars, without being interfered by a group of rowdy youths. Now, the evidence that we're going to show at the trial will sustain the charges of disorderly conduct the other charge. The interesting thing is, though, that if these folks are convicted after the trial, they are giving up an opportunity to do community service where the case would be sealed and the charge dismissed. But their attorneys have made a judgment that they want to go to trial, and so be it.
And Bob Herbert also had something to say about that, because
right.
he went after your statement in the clip that we played that no kid will go to jail, you'll offer them community service. And about that, he wrote, what he meant was that he expected the kids to go quietly, to plead guilty and passively accept the blot on their records and what he thought of as mild punishment. But the kids had a surprise for him. They refused to plead guilty to something they hadn't done.
You know, Bob Herbert totally misunderstands the system. They would not have a blot on their record if there was no record. Does he understand that? I don't think so. I hope he's listening, and I'd be happy to engage him in a debate over this.
If they get community service, then what are they getting it for without a blot on their record?
The case is dismissed at the end of the community service. That's the way it works. And the file is sealed, so they have no criminal record. So he obviously misunderstands, and it's unfortunate because he's such a otherwise bright fellow.
Deanna Rodriguez, do you want to weigh in on that aspect?
No, I think Mr. Hines said it all. They wouldn't have a conviction. They would do the community service. They would get an adjournment in contemplation of dismissal, known as an ACD. And once the community service was done, there would be no criminality on their records at all.
I mean, I hope anybody who knows me knows I have much more difficult and engaging things to do other than roust young men who happen to be walking down the streets doing nothing wrong. But that's the case for the trial. The trial will determine whether or not the charges that were made and independently investigated by us are sustainable.
I want to play one clip of somebody else. Can we play the Una Chatterjee cut? This is 2A4 of the activist group Make the Road by Walking, who came on the show sometime after you did last spring. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, why would D.A. Hines and Police Commissioner Kelly make this up? Here's a little bit of that exchange.
If there had been jumping on cars or anything like that, we would be the first people to say that wasn't appropriate. The real thing here that happened is we have parents, we have eyewitnesses telling us that nothing like that happened. And so what we feel like we need to do, what our responsibility is to not let anybody tell lies about the young people in our neighborhood, not even District Attorney Hines or Commissioner Ray Kelly.
Why would they make this up?
I think that they made a mistake and they need to justify it.
Mm-hmm. Diana, why don't you address the question of the eyewitnesses, because attorneys for the defendants came forward with a list of people to be interviewed.
There were several attorneys that gave us names of people they claimed would corroborate their clients and their version of events. Those persons were spoken to. They did not give the information that was relayed to us by the attorneys in the court. In fact, it was quite the opposite. And again, we're talking about a community of people who have the issues they have to live in with the gangs and with other issues that are going on in their community, that they were more than willing to speak off the record and say, this is not what happened. We actually, quite the opposite happened, but are terrified of coming forward and testifying for the prosecution, or I would think for the defense as well.
What is, since you're the head of the gang unit in the Brooklyn DA's office, what do you think is the gang context here? What is the gang involvement specifically in this case, and what is the larger context of a gang presence in Bushwick, Brooklyn?
Well, clearly, in this area of Bushwick, we're talking about two particular gangs. We're talking about the Linden Street Bloods and the Pretty Boy family, who is an offshoot of the Bloods. And a week or two, about 10 days before this incident occurred, there was a murder. And one person was murdered by a rival gang member from the Linden Street Bloods. The person murdered, Mr. McFarlane, was already an identified gang member and was a high-ranking member of the Pretty Boy family. This is two gangs in that area that have been clashing and knocking heads in a variety of different scenarios of criminal activity that has occurred in the past. Very difficult to prosecute gang-motivated crimes. The word gang instills fear in people, in the average listener. So imagine living right in the midst of a situation where you have two very strong gangs that are into other criminality and are beating each other and shooting each other right in the midst of where you walk to and your children go to school. So this is a really frightening situation. And that's where, you know, this isn't a situation, at least from the evidence, that this group of youth were walking down the street and were just, you know, taken over by the police. There were other information that the police had received in the days prior to the incident itself. And it all had to do, it stemmed from the murder that had occurred on May 16th.
And we're not going to allow Brooklyn.
Right.
And I believe that's the view of the police commissioner or any place else in the city, to become Chicago or Los Angeles. And when we looked at the cases, the 20 cases we had, we fairly and completely reviewed against 10, found that there were no specific evidence that we could prove beyond a reasonable doubt. They were dismissed. The 10 cases remaining, they're going to be prosecuted, and it'll be up to a judge to decide whether or not we've proven the guilt of these defendants.
And some of the kids involved came on the show and said, maybe we were mistaken for gang members. Maybe there are gangs out there that terrorize the community, but we weren't gang members engaging in gang activity. We were going to somebody's wake.
Right. And, you know, that's fine. That's their view. And let them go to trial.
Let me take one phone call for you from someone who says she was arrested, I think, as part of that same incident. Rachel, not the same incident? Oh, well, we'll find out. Rachel in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, it wasn't the same incident. It was right around the same time. I was arrested in Brooklyn. I'm a white, sort of middle-class woman. I was arrested in Cobble Hill. When I stopped and saw two officers who were what I thought was kind of violently arresting a homeless guy, and I stopped about 10 feet from them, and one of the arresting officers really didn't like that I stopped, and there was a crowd, and people knew the homeless guy, and it seemed like he wasn't going to get arrested, but the cops basically weren't responding to the crowd, and I got on the phone with 911, and when I was on the phone with 911, they actually asked for the badge number, so I went to look at the arresting officer, one of the arresting officer's badges, and she said, well, that's it, and she went and handcuffed me. And what happened, even though this whole crowd of people was saying, you're crazy, she didn't do anything, was three undercover young guys came out of nowhere. I was pushed up against a building. I was handcuffed. They broke my cell phone. I was taken to the local precinct, where I was kept for about 11 hours without being told I was arrested. As it happened, I was a nursing mother at the time. That didn't matter, of course. And when they finally let me make a call around 9 o'clock at night, it was just before they brought me to central booking, where I was kept overnight.
I'm going to have to keep you short. Now, this is, you know, your side of your story, obviously. What do you want from the DA?
I want to get some more facts. What happened to the case, man?
Well, what happened to the case was that I ended up pleading. And the reason I ended up pleading, after going back and forth, I pled to disorderly conduct. And that's the reason I was calling, is because, you know, I know Joe Hines. I know his policies. I know he does fairly progressive work for a prosecutor. And I think that to say that disorderly conduct is a charge where you don't need evidence, or where you know the facts beforehand, is really very counter to what our justice system is all about. And I think we all know that the plea system, why did I plea? I pled because the fear was, look, if I have possibly five officers, and I read their testimony and it was a lie from start to finish, which I know that's my view, but whatever. I mean, I'm a upright citizen, blah, blah, blah. But anyway.
But were you represented by an attorney?
I was.
And what was the original charge?
The original charge included assaulting an officer. They said that I punched the officer in the face, that I kicked the officer. I've never punched or kicked anyone in my life. Mm. They said that I incited a riot because there were other people there. It turns out this homeless man was known in the neighborhood. I did not know him. What the charges that they ended up offering were... I believe it was disorderly conduct and resisting arrest.
So your larger point is, if this could happen to you, a white middle-class person without a record, imagine what kind of trumped-up things police might say about these kids of color in Bushwick. Is that what you're trying to say, Rachel?
That's part of it. Yeah.
But first of all, the captain who ordered the arrest is African-American. That aside, would you be willing to call my office, Rachel? Please call my office, 718.
Yeah.
250. 2202, and give, you know, your full name and the date of the incident, so I can take a look at it, and leave your phone number so I can call you back.
I will.
Great.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Right,
thank
I used
you.
To work at Vera, so we worked with you.
Okay. I'm sorry. It wasn't brought to my attention earlier.
But I think the broader point is not, you know, to admit that our plea system is really a flawed system, and that it's not wrong of these guys not to take a plea. They're actually standing by their constitutional rights.
They're not taking a plea.
I know, but I'm saying not.
No. That's not the point. It is not a plea of guilt. It would be community service, and then the case would be dismissed. That's not a plea. And in addition to which, I mean, you know, I've been a defense lawyer a third of my career. I don't understand why anyone would advise you to plead guilty when you're not guilty.
Rachel, thank you for your call, and we will continue in a minute. with D.A. Hynes on something that actually got him good press on the editorial page of the New York Times.
I don't regard Bob Herbert's attack on me to be bad press. I really don't.
Really?
No.
What would bad press be then?
I think it's said that he would use the word canard. Maybe he doesn't understand the use of it.
More with Deanna Rodriguez and Joe Hynes in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with the Brooklyn District Attorney, Charles Joe Hynes, and Deanna Rodriguez, who runs the DA office's anti-gang unit. You have something called Calm Alert, which has to do with the way prisoners are treated upon reentry. This pertains to former inmates, and as I mentioned, this got you, among many other things, good press on the New York Times editorial page. Just recently, an editorial titled "The Right Way to Handle Former Inmates." Tell us about Calm Alert.
Simply, 3,000 to 5,000 formerly incarcerated come back to Brooklyn every year. So 7 years ago, Patricia Gatling, who was my first assistant and is now the chair of the Human Rights Commission for Mayor Bloomberg, came up with a very, very uncomplicated idea. If we could give them wraparound services, job training, job placement, transitional employment when they get out of prison, and then train them for more permanent employment, could we reduce recidivism? Because 6 out of 10 of these formerly incarcerated go back to prison within 3 years, the largest percentage, almost 45%, in the first year. 7 years later, we have documented that 2 out of 10 go back to prison as a result of our program. Now, self-evaluation, self-validation is not accepted by the academic community or law enforcement community. So we had Professor Bruce Weston, originally at Princeton, now at Harvard, analyze the program. He's come to the same conclusion, that based on the statistics, 2 out of 10 in our program go back to prison after 3 years instead of six. And I'm hopeful that it's the kind of program that will be picked up by other prosecutors, because I think it makes perfect sense. It is a public safety measurement for us.
Why isn't there more of this kind of thing in the criminal justice system in general? I'll tell you, and I'm sure you know, that when activists come on this show and talk about what's needed to keep kids out of lives of crime and to reduce crime in general, that reintegration of people coming out of prison is always right at the top of people's list. That there's this revolving door where people get sent away, maybe for relatively little things at first, maybe not for denting a car, but for relatively little things. And then they wind up becoming hardened criminals, in effect, in prison, and they don't see a life of hope afterwards, and then they get out and they do more things.
Well, a larger question for me is why don't people know about our program in Brooklyn, the reentry program? And that's why it's. I appreciate you allowing me the opportunity. It makes perfect sense. It's public safety. The people who are in our program are out. They're not people that we selected while they were in prison. These people have served their time. So our alternative is to allow them to come back to their neighborhood. They always come back to their own home neighborhood. They have very fragile jobs. You need a job before you get released on parole. But those jobs, for the most part, as we say in Brooklyn, are fugazi kind of jobs. Many of them don't have any contact with family because, for example, under NYCHA rules, New York City Housing Authority, if someone is a convicted felon, they can't reside in a housing authority apartment. So they have this weighing against them. And the alternative then is to allow them to wander around and get themselves in trouble and to get back to prison. This program, our reentry program, is all about sustaining them, giving them the kind of comprehensive services that will change their lifestyle so that they don't commit crime, and it's been remarkably successful.
Ms. Rodriguez, can this be specifically applied to members of gangs in a way that would have community and not just individual impact?
Well, the DA is already dealing with that in a project that he has allowed us to work called Project Redirect, and it is specifically geared towards redirecting our young gang members from the gang life and the subculture of that gang life has become, and redirecting them back into our community mainstream. So, I mean, even with the issue of gangs, it is very dangerous and frightening to communities at large. The DA has made a commitment to save as many of these young gang members as we can. Kids join gangs, they don't really know the consequences of it until they're in it. And we offer them an opportunity to come out of the gang life, even to the point where the DA has spent lots of money relocating gang members and their families so that they can start a new life. So it's a project we've just started off on, and the DA gives us much of his support and all of the resources that he has available.
What would you say the big picture is right now of gang activity in Brooklyn? Is it on the rise like we hear about from Newark and other American cities?
Well, clearly the gang violence is something that's a national problem. And people ask that question of me often. I'm not so sure we can say it's on the rise. Clearly, this has been an issue that has been very serious for the last several years. We've gotten better at identifying gang cases earlier on in their life. But clearly, now we have a situation where the district attorney sends us out to do gang awareness workshops so that now we're educating the adults, we're educating the community on what gangs are about. Are there gangs in your neighborhood? And we spend a great deal of time going out and educating parents and teachers and other adults.
And one of the things kids have got to understand, blood in and blood out is serious stuff.
Amen.
You know, you get yourself beaten up, you beat someone else to get into the gang, and that's the way you get out of the gang. So it's terrifying for kids, and that's why it's so important to have a redirect program.
When gangs do exist in Brooklyn, are they mostly immigrant group gangs at this point? Is the population of the gangs changing with the population of Brooklyn?
Let's be very clear that the issue of gangs is not something that is an immigrant problem. This is something that is facing all ethnic groups, all economic strata. It's what's different today about gangs today is that we have allowed this situation to become a subculture. And we're now prosecuting second-generation gang members. One of the more popular ways now to join a gang is to be born into it. And, you know, 10 years ago when the DA, well, over 10 years ago when the DA started the Bureau, the number one reason kids joined gangs was they wanted to be a part of something. You couldn't make a profile of that disenfranchised youth who had personal issues, who came from a dysfunctional family. Today, the number one reason kids are joining gangs is they have to pick a side. So, you know, it's not just an immigrant problem. It's not just a working class or a poor problem. It hits all spectrums of the community.
Now, you say across economic strata.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
People, middle class, upper middle class.
Absolutely.
Joining gangs because why?
So in some situations, it is because they have to pick a side. You have many gangs that are rivaling
each other.
Because
they control the neighborhood.
Absolutely, and they control the surrounding of the schools.
And a lot of these kids come from dysfunctional homes. I mean, surely you understand that upper middle class people or wealthy people are involved in domestic violence. They are involved in drug abuse. So these kids are looking for an extended family. The family is the gang. And it doesn't matter whether they're white or people of color.
Right.
Look, when I was a kid growing up, we had the South Brooklyn Boys, the South Brooklyn Tigers, the Underhill Gang. They were all white gangs and just as violent as the kids today.
But the general traditional understanding of gangs mm-hmm. is that kids join them, yeah, somewhat out of a sense of needing to choose up sides if the gangs are very dominant in that mm-hmm. neighborhood, but also out of a sense of hopelessness regarding the straight life, and that with gangs they feel some sense of protection. With gangs there may be economic motivations if they don't see any economic possibilities for themselves. Are you minimizing all of that?
No. I think if you're a kid growing up in a home that's filled with domestic violence, filled with drug abuse, you're going to look for an extension of your family, a good family to be with. The family becomes the gang, and that's unfortunate.
Albert in Greenwich, you're on WNYC with DA Joe Hines from Brooklyn and the head of the gang unit, Deanna Rodriguez. Hello.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Lehrer. I just had a quick question.
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Morning.
I'm sorry to you all. Good morning, all. I have a question. Simply, like this incident here, right. That prompted these arrests and these right. kids being charged. I just wanted to know, how did the problem get so bad, and with all of these gangs in this neighborhood, that this incident has to be the thing that, you know, like basically gets in the big news. Like, what was done before? What has been done to prevent these gangs from infiltrating this neighborhood? I mean, I've been listening to you guys, and it just seems like, okay, we're trying to like put a Band-Aid on this thing after it's like this big festering wound.
No, the issue is that this has become a cause célèbre. That these kids are not guilty. They were profiled. They were unlawfully arrested. And that's going to be an issue decided at trial. We had 20 cases that we had to review. We found it was not proof beyond a reasonable doubt. In 10 of those cases, we dismissed them. The 10 that remain, we believe we have sufficient evidence. That doesn't require audio or video or proof of damage. It's got we have proof beyond a reasonable doubt to sustain the charges. It became something that was a cause célèbre because I think people misunderstood the motivation.
And here's an email on a related note that asks, does D.A. Hynes believe that a purpose can be served by prosecuting a case, even a conviction, if a conviction is not obtained? Can this be a useful effort in the context of community relations? Can it have a chilling effect on undesirable conduct if defendants have to exhaust resources in court?
Well, the whole purpose of punishment in the criminal justice system is to act as a deterrence. What I've suggested is, it's not necessary for us to go that route. We could solve this with community service, and then the case would be sealed and dismissed. And I think in community service, I think kids would get an understanding that they don't have to stay in gang activity in order to enjoy their youth.
Before you go, maybe you can give us a little perspective on the Sean Bell case that the Queens DA's office begins presenting today. I don't expect you to comment on the specifics of the case, really, but in general, the police officer defendants chose a judge trial rather than a jury trial. How do you, as a prosecutor, argue differently before a judge who is somebody who's obviously savvy? He knows all the tricks. He knows the cops' tricks. He knows defense attorneys, prosecutors' tricks. How do you argue differently than before a jury in a case like this?
I mean, first of all, I've been teaching trial advocacy for 25 years at two law schools and 16 at another law school. And, you know, I'm not into trickery. I don't teach my kids tricks. I teach them trial techniques. You would argue to a judge really on the basis of the facts and the law. You would argue to a jury on the basis of the facts and how you would present it. It's not discernibly different. It really isn't. People tell you it is, but they really don't understand the technique of trying a case. So, also you should understand, if your listeners don't, the defendants make the option about going to trial without a jury.
Correct.
And in this case, they opted for judge.
They must think that the judge is going to see things differently than a jury.
You know, I wouldn't speculate. Again, I spent a third of my career as a defense lawyer, and I'm not going to tell you the reason that I think I would have done this if I were in that position, but I've certainly opted for a non-jury trial and from time to time.
The first witness for the prosecution is expected to be Sean Bell's widow, right. Nicole Paul Bell, who was not at the scene.
Right.
How do you use someone like that as a witness if she was not a witness?
Well, we agreed at the top of this that I would not be talking about the specifics. You'd have to ask Judge Brown about that.
All right. And last thing, tell me if this is too specific.
Yeah.
Some people believe that the police will use a fourth man theory, that a fourth man who has never been identified was at the scene with a gun, even though the three men shot by police were all unarmed.
You're absolutely right, Brian. It is too specific.
So that's it.
That's
all right. Since you've been teaching law, here's the last question.
Sure.
It's as general as I can possibly make it on
okay.
this. Since you've been teaching trial advocacy for all these years,
right.
What should our listeners look for as savvy viewers of this to look at this trial in an unbiased way and as, you know, informed a way as possible as they see all the arguments that both sides will be making?
Follow the facts. That's all there is. Follow the facts.
You're nodding, Deanna.
Great answer.
Three-word answer. Sums it up. Follow the facts. Amen. D.A. Charles Hines, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian. Always a pleasure.
Deanna Rodriguez, head of the anti-gang unit in the D.A.'s office in Brooklyn. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And coming up in a minute, it's the 100th anniversary of the PATH trains, which means that for today at least, you can ride free. We'll have a call-in on the difference between PATH train culture and subway culture. Stay with us.